Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Dalet Amud Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara here is discussing the exemption of Tumtum and Androgynous from our Mishnah. Gemara wants to know, where do we know that they are exempt from Re'iyah? Tan Rabbanan, Zachur, Lotzi et Anashim. Zuchurcha, Lotzi Tumtum ve'Androgynous. So both in Pashat Mishpatim as well as in Pashat Re'eh, where there's a demand that a person comes up to Yerushalayim, the Aliyah Regel, there it says, Kol Zechurcha, all your males will come. So the Gemara divides it up and says, it could have just said Zechur, which is male, Zechurcha, and the possessive adds on an additional miyut over here. So Zechur comes to exclude women, so women are exempt from Re'iyah. Zechurcha, Lotzi, Tumtum, Vandroginus. Zechurcha comes to exclude a Tumtum and Androginus. Kol Zechurcha, they're both at Aktanim. So Kol comes to include the young children. The two questions you would ask here is, why would a woman be chayevet anyway? Because it's a mitzvah to say she has man grama, which the Gemara will address. And then as far as the tumtum and androgynous, why is the Torah addressing them at all? They're a safek. As far as the Torah is concerned, as far as Hashem is concerned, there are no safekot. It either is or isn't, whatever their status is known to him. For us, it might be a safek. But the Torah wouldn't address something that's a safek. So those are the two questions we have to answer with regards to this limud. So Amamar, Zachur dotziyat anashim, halom alikra. What do I need a pasuk for? Michdei mitzvat asei shazman gramau. It's a mitzvah asei shazman gramau. It's a time-bound positive commandment, which generally women are turot from. B'chol mitzvot asei shazman gramau nashim turot. Where it says, itzrich, we still need it. The same gzeirah shava that we saw before in terms of re'iyah, re'iyah, mihakel, and by hakel, malahalan nashim chayavot, just like by hakel, it's explicit that the women are chayavot, so too over here, we would assume that by re'iyah, right, would take the gzeirah shava, would bring it over to the din of re'iyah, and women would be chayavot. So we need a specific miut to tell us, even though there is this gzeirah shava, even though there is a connection to Hakel, Avkan Anashim Chayavot, and we would have thought the women are Chayavot, Kamash Valon, that the miut tells us that that's not the case. So that's the reason we need a miut for women that, who otherwise should have been Turot because of Mitzvah Daseisha's Man Grama. Nevertheless, we say, maybe they should be Chayavot because of Hakel. Along comes the miut and says, even though we have the Gzeir Sheva, don't be Michayev women in Mitzvah Re'iyah. Now I'm Amar. Zchurcha lotzi tumtum va'androgynous. Pishlama androgynous. By an androgynous, it's trich. We do need it. Salkadat chamina hovit leitzat zichrut lechayev. So at least by an androgynous, where he has the sexual organs of both male and female, so there you might suggest or might think that he is chayav in re'iyah because he has a male side to him. So that male side would obligate him. So kamash malon, debiria bifnei atzmohu, that he is his own creation, which are the different opinions. With regards to androgynous, you really have three possibilities of what they are, maybe even four. One is that they're male. One is that they're female. One is that they are birya bifnei atzmo, which means that their own category. They don't fit into either category. Or the last possibility, which might not be an independent possibility, is that it's a safek. I mean that they live within that twilight zone of both male and female, that we're just not certain, and therefore they'll have both aspects to them. So because of that, you would have thought possibly that the androgynous should be chayav in re'iyah because he has this male side to him, whether that means that we think they're male or there's enough of a reason to believe that having that would include you over here. Kamash v'lon, that we view an androgynous as being its own category. He's totally separate from male and female. There's another category called androgynous, and therefore, they're left out. They are excluded from the obligation of Re'iyah. Ela tumtum sveikuhu. By tumtum, it's a complete safek. And therefore, mi itzrich kra lemi'utei sveika. Since when do you need a pasuk to eliminate the safek? We don't know whether this individual is male or female. But as far as the Torah is concerned, if you're male, you're chayav. If you're female, you're not chayav. The fact that this individual, we don't know, does not mean that the Torah will address it. The Torah addressed males and females. That's all it needed to address. So Amar Abaye, this is not exactly your normal tumtum. A normal tumtum is where there are no organs indicating which sex they belong to. But here, Kishe Beitzav mi Bachutz, he has some male organ that is sticking out. He has his testicles that are there. So there is a slight hint or slight leaning towards the fact that he might be male. And so because of that, we would have considered possibly mi mechayev him in Re'iyah. Again, the Kamash Balon that we are not mechayev him. He is not included in the Chiyuv of Re'iyah, whether that means that he is classified as being a Bria b'fnei atzmo, also like the Androgynous, or simply the Torah requires Zachar Nekeva, and that's it. If it's anything else, then you're not included in the mitzvah to go up the Re'iyah. Samamar, Kol Zechurcha, the Rabote Daktani. Here's the last of the Limudim that we had in the Braita, which is the word Kol, comes to include the kids. Vatnan, doesn't our Mishnah say, Chutz Micheresh Shoteh V'Katan? Our Mishnah explicitly excludes a Katan from the obligation to go up to Re'iyah. Samar Baye Lokasha, Kan B'Katan Shigia L'Chinuch, Kan B'Katan Shalo Yigia L'Chinuch. Simple answer is, depends whether the child is of age where it's valuable to take him up. There's a reason to be mechanech the child to do aliyah, the regel, and to participate in the riyah. Another one is the case where it's a child that is below that age. So below that age is easy to understand. He's exempt. The Torah says that a katan is patur. The harder thing to understand over here is that above the age of chinuch, that he would be chayav. The obligation min haTorah only starts once a person reaches the age of bar mitzvah, when they are obligated. The mitzvah of chinuch, according to everybody, is only a mitzvah derabanan. It's not a mitzvah d'oraita chinuch. So over here, you're suggesting that we have a limud in the pasuk that says, kol zechurcha, there are both ketanim, which now makes it sound like the mitzvah of chinuch is min haTorah. You have a ribuy from the pasuk in the Torah that says, a katan is chayav, and you tell me, you know when that is? That's when he is chigia lechinuch. That's the case where he's a gil lechinuch. That suggests that chinuch is min haTorah. There's an obligation min haTorah to be mechanech. The one that says patur, our Mishnah says patur. Okay, we understand that. That's below the age of chinuch. Now the Gemara says, katan shigil lechinuch, derabonani. The Gemara says, what are you talking about? You can't have it be d'oraita. It's only a din derabonan. Now, what the din derabonan is, we discussed on the first daf of the Masechta. Again, Rashi says that it's the rabbinic institution that the parents educate the child and mechanech the child. The Tosafot says that the mitzvah chinuch is that the child themselves is obligated once they reach that age. But either way, both agree that it's only a mitzvah derabanan. Where it says in Ochanami, you're right. Bekra asmachta bi'alma. This limud is not a full-fledged limud of the pasuk. It's simply a hint at the fact that ketanim over the age of chinuch are included, but only included midorabanan. They're not included midoraita. Min haTorah, until you're an ish, until you reach the age where you're obligated, there is no mitzvah of Re'iyah. The Rabbonon instituted a mitzvah of Re'iyah below that age, and we discussed again on the first daf what the implications of that are in terms of being mechanechtem. Tosafot, who thinks you bring up a korban, according to Rashi, it's a little easier, and that's why maybe Rashi explained the Mishnah this way, is simply that he has to be Ola the Regel. Being Ola the Regel, there's not really much problem in terms of a kid coming up to the Migdash. The bigger problem is if you think you have to bring a korban, how does he bring a korban? Even if you do it on a voluntary basis, there are certain restrictions in terms of a voluntary basis. How it works, again, we discussed on the first daf. Velakra the mayata. Then what is the pasuk for? You have the word kol here. Kol's a ribuy. So then what's the real limud, min haTorah, that comes out of this? Lidik acherim. It's like the limud of the acherim, the tanya. Acherim amim. Hamikametz, v'amitzaref nechoshet, v'aborsi, turim min ha-ri'iyah. These are all professions where the profession involves engaging in items that are foul smelling. And because of that, these people do not smell well, do not smell good. In their day, it was much harder to remove the smell. Even today, people are involved in certain products or certain things that smell or have a foul odor. It's very hard for them to get rid of it, but at least today, it's a little more plausible. In their day, for sure, if you worked in these things, you smelled like whatever your job was. So here, these are three professions in which you're involved with items that have this foul odor. I mean, kametz is someone who gathers, according to Rashi, dog feces. And Rashi suggests that over here, they did this for the purpose of tanning the orot, the hides. And it was used because of the nitrogen or whatever was inside of the dog feces. It was beneficial or efficacious in helping to work the hides. So therefore, this is an individual who goes around and picks up dog feces. not with a pooper scooper, but he does it with his hands, and therefore he's going to smell like dog feces. Hamitzareif nechoshet is someone who smelts copper at the point of mining, where they mine the rocks for the copper, and then they smelt out the copper from those rocks. It has a terrible odor to it, and again, this individual is involved in that will smell like that. And the bursi himself, the bursi is well known throughout Shas. A bursi is a tanner, someone who works the hides, who works with all these chemicals. Even today, if you go into a place where they're working the hides, the smell is unbelievably pungent. And if you work there, you would also smell like those chemicals, like those things that they are using. And so therefore, a bursi, first of all, the Gemara in Bava Batra says, where you locate a bursi is important. You can't just put your hide working area wherever you want because the smell, and it affects all the residences around it. And you have to be careful about which way the wind blows. Number two is, comes up in the Mishnayot, we're going to see in Ketubot, if a woman marries certain individuals who have these odors to them, and she then decides that she can't handle it, she can say that, I thought I could handle it, and in the end I just couldn't handle it. So we see that these were serious odors that people really could not handle. So these people are pturim min ariyah, mishum, shenamar kol zechurcha. Why? Mishi achol alot im kol zechurcha. Someone who can be a part of society at large, excluded are these individuals who other people would not want to be around or would not be comfortable being around. And so therefore they do not have this kol zechurcha. They are in a social context. They need to be on the side. They need to be off the side. That doesn't make you part of kol zechurcha. So because of that, they are pturim in ariyah because they can't accomplish going up with the multitudes. They can't be a part of the group that goes up to Yerushalayim, and that's what the real limud is. From here, kol zechurcha, someone who is, I call me'urav ben abriyot, someone who can just be a part of everyone else, be there with ease, and without causing anybody else discomfort. So these people are excluded from the chiyuv of aliyah regel. So this is the doraita usage of kol zechurcha. The limud of ketanim is simply an asmachto, that the ketanim are not chayavim midoraita, and chinuch simply midrabanan. Nashim vavadim she'inan mishucharim. So women are pturot, which we already discussed in the previous section of the Gemara, and then slaves that are not freed are pturim. Now Gemara says, bishlam nashim kidamran. Women, we understand, we just dealt with it in the Gemara, why they're pturot. We have a miut for them, and we would have thought they were chayavot from hakel, and we said no. Say, el avadim minalon. How do we know that avadim are excluded over here? So I'm Ravuna Makra, the Pasuk says, El Pnei Adon Hashem, to see or appear and see the Master Hashem. Mi she'en lo elo Adon Echad. Someone only has one master. Yet shezeh she'esh lo Adon Echer. This person has another master that sits between him and Hashem. So the Gemara says, Ha lama likra. Why do I need a Pasuk at all? Michdei. Let us understand. Let us be clear. Kol mitzvah she'esha chayevet ba, eved chayev ba. Any mitzvah which a woman is chayevet in, that an eved kenani is chayevin. Kol mitzvah she'ena isha chayevet ba. Any mitzvah that a woman is not chayevet in, ena eved chayev ba. Then an eved's not chayev in it. So the Gemara, because we have a limud in the Gemara in Kiddushin which teaches us this din, la, gzeir shava of la from by isha in Parshat Kiteitse. Over there it says, v'katov la sefer kritut, and over here, la, by the Eved Kenani, by the Shifcha Necherefet that is mentioned in Parshat Kedoshim, it says, O Chufsha, Lo Nitan La. So both of those cases, you have La, La, that Gezer Shava teaches you that an Eved Kenani, or a Shifcha Kenanit, have the Chiyov and Mitzvot like an Isha. Well, if an Isha is excluded already from Riyah, why do I need a separate Limud for an Eved Kenani? Samaravina Lo Nitzrucha Elomi Shechetzio Eved V'chetzio Ben Chorin. This goes back to the first daf, the first thing we learned in the Gemara, that the Gemara said there that the kol chayavin biriyah comes to include a chatzi eved, chatzi ben chorin. Gemara says, what are you going to do with Ravina? Ravina who says that a chatzi eved, chatzi ben chorin is patur. Here is Ravina. I'm Ravina, lo nitzucha lo mish chetzi eved, chetzi ben chorin. That comes to exclude. I mean, someone who's a chatzi eved, chatzi ben chorin is not chayavin riyah. Dekanami. You can be medayek that from the Mishnah Tani, Nashim, Vavadim, She'ena Mishucharim. It says women, and then slaves that are not freed. By the way, definition of a slave is, he's not free. So why do you have to tell me that he's a slave that isn't free? It must be that qualifier is coming to tell you some more information. What's that? My Shayna Meshuchorim. Eloi Meshayna Meshuchorim. Klaal. They're not free at all. Litnei Avadim Stamo. Just write the word Eved. Eved means you're not free. Elav Shayna Meshuchorim. The Gamre. They're not totally free. My Nehu. What? Someone who's not totally free? Mishachetzio Eved. Vechetzio Ben Chorim. And the way the Gemara reconciled that, at first the Gemara brought other opportunities to include something from a Kol Chayavim. And then the Gemara said, Ibaiteima, that there's Mishnah Rishona and Mishnah Achrona. Meaning that when we say that the Chetzio Eved and the Chetzio Ben Chorin is Chayav, included from the word Hakol, that's according to Rashi and Tosafot, that's according to the Mishnah Achrona. Mishnah Achrona, where Beit Hillel acquiesced to the opinion of Beit Shammai and says that we force the Adon to free him. And since he's going to be a free man, he's going to be Chayav. The latter half of the Mishnah that says, Chetzio Eved, Chetzio Ben Chorim, which is Ravina's statement, which says, Abadim, Shena Meshucharim, are Turim. That was Mishnah Rishona. That's before Beit Hillel changed their mind. In the case where Beit Hillel says that he stays as a half Eved and a half Ben Chorim, over there he's going to be Patur from the Aliyah Regel, Patur from Ri'iyah. On the other hand, we saw that the Rambam in the Perush Mishnayot learns the other way, that the Mishnah Rishona explains Kol Chayavim. In the case where Beit Hillel said he stays like a Chatzi Ben Chorim by a Chatzi Eved, there he is Chayav, according to the Rambam, because that's the way he's going to be. That's his permanent status. Whereas the case of Chatzi Eved, Chatzi Ben Chorim, when the Mishnah Chrona, when Beit Hillel agrees that we force his Adon to free him, right now he's not free, but he could be free. So we're going to say to him, you're not going to do Riyah until you are free. You're just a step away. We're just going to wait for that step in order for you to be free, and that's where you're going to be Chayav. That's where the Rambam reconciles. But either way, that's how we reconcile Rav Ino, who says here that in Chatzi Eved and Chatzi Ben Chorin is Patur, with the first part of the Mishnah that says a Kol Chayavim, where the Gemara said that includes Chatzi Eved and Chatzi Ben Chorin. What's interesting over here, in general, when you discuss about an Eved being Chayav in Mitzvot, an Eved Kenani, being Chayav in Mitzvot, like an Isha, there are two possibilities of how to view that. It's a simple Chakira, comes up in Bava Kamma as well, when you talk about Chatzi Nezek. Anytime you talk about a half of something, the question is, what would have been and what is now? When we say Chatzi Nezek, that you're Chayav, does it mean that you should have been Chayav for the whole amount? And then the Torah comes and gives a dispensation that says you're only Chayav in half? Or is it that you weren't Chayav at all? And now the Torah comes along and says, no, you're not Patur the Gamre, you have to pay Chatzi. You could ask the same thing, or you could say the same thing with regards to an Eved Kenani. What was the original assumption of what an Eved Kenani would be Chayav in? Do we assume that an Eved Kenani would have been Chayav full-fledged in all the mitzvot? And then along comes the Gezeirah Shevah and says, no, we take that down a notch, and he's only Chayav in mitzvot like an Isha. Or is it the other way around? Because an Eved Kenani would have otherwise been Patur Mikola mitzvot HaTorah. He wouldn't have been Chayav at all. And along comes the Lala and teaches you that you're now obligated in all the mitzvot that a woman is obligated in. It does have some nafkamina, although everybody agrees that this is the case in general, is for regard to mitzvot that a woman is p'turah from. But she's p'turah not because there are mitzvot that say she has man grama, but there are mitzvot that are not applicable to her. The Mishnah in Kedushin lists over certain mitzvot that women are p'turot from, not because there are mitzvot that say she has man grama, but simply they're not relevant. For instance, mitzvot regarding beards or payas. Cutting one's peyot, cutting one's beard. Those are mitzvot that are not relevant to the women, not because, say, mitzvot says she's one grab, just women don't grow beards, women don't have peyot. So therefore, they're not governed by that ruling. So then, is an Eved Kenani Chayav in that case? Or, for instance, a case of Pru Urvu. By the case of Pru Urvu, where an Isha is Ptorah, is an Eved Kenani Chayav? And all of these are related to these chakirot, but also understanding the mitzvah Pru Urvu. So I'm going to leave that on the side. But the question is an Eved Kenani Chayav? It might relate to which way or which direction you come from. If you come from the direction he's Patur, and the only reason is Chayav here is because of the Isha, maybe he would not be obligated in those mitzvot, because we've only brought him up to a woman now. He was at zero level, now he's up to a woman, so he only can be obligated in what a woman is obligated in. If you say it's the other way around, where he was 100% Chayav, and now we have the Gezeirah Shevah comes and reduces his Chiyuv, in that case, you would assume that everything is Chayav. What we reduce with regards to the woman is simply things that are mitzvot aseh she'has man grama that would otherwise be relevant for the Eved Kenani. That's one way to view it, that would be the difference between them. Or you could argue there would be no difference in the opinion. And the p'tur of a woman by these mitzvot is not because she is not chayevet in them. She is chayevet in these mitzvot, just she can't do them. It's not practically, it's just not relevant. So someone who is relevant to them they would be chayav in these mitzvot because it is relevant to an Eved Kenani who is a male. That's one thing, just a general approach to understanding what it means here that an Eved Kenani is chayav in mitzvot like a woman. The second thing is hashkafically what that means. And this is an important thing. Many people therefore read into this a certain bias against women because the Mishnah or the Gemara always puts Nashim Vavadim together. And therefore that means that an Isha is equated to an Eved. And that's not true. I heard from Rabbi Rosenzweig once, and I think it's an important thing, that the Gemara or the Torah is looking for paradigms. In terms of a woman does not have a full Chiyuv HaMitzvot. Why does she not have a full Chiyuv HaMitzvot? Because she is a woman. What does that have any relevance to? The relevance is that she has other obligations that we need to defer to in order for her to accomplish those obligations. If we were to make her fully chayevet in mitzvot, it would detract from her ability to accomplish that which she needs to do. So as a mother of a household, as the leader, the akeret habayit, if we told her she's chayevet in all the mitzvot, it would be impossible for her to accomplish that because she would be pulled by another demands, by the demands of the mitzvot. So we exempt her from those demands so that she can carry out her function as the akeret habayit. So the ptur from mitzvot is a way, or pragmatic way for her to accomplish what she needs to accomplish. Now we come to an Eved Kenani. An Eved Kenani has a problem, which is that he is not in control of his own destiny, of his own time, in a sense, because he has a master. So now I say, okay, I'm looking for a paradigm where someone has other obligations that exempt them from mitzvot because of those obligations. Well, where do we find some picture that's very similar to that? That's a woman. A woman has that, and therefore I'm going to say by Eved Kenani, not because an Eved Kenani and Isha are equal, but because I'm trying to accomplish the same thing, I'm looking for a paradigm of someone who has other obligations, but still has a Chiyuv HaMitzvot. That's an Isha. So again, the equation is not an equation of equivalence. It's an equation of paradigm, which says that it's a, right, parallel situations, where I have other obligations. In order to accomplish those obligations, I need a certain amount of exemption from the mitzvot. And so that's true by an Isha. It's also true by an Eved Kenani. But the two have nothing to do with each other in a certain amount of equivalence. So that's the answer to the question about why they're always grouped together. It's not a matter of equivalence. It's a matter of convenience, but convenience in the sense of they both have the same derivative or same reason for why they would be throughout the mitzvot, but coming from different directions. Okay, v'achiger, v'suma, v'chole, v'zakein. These are other people who are exempted from ri'iyah. Tanu banan. So over here we have regalim, that we saw before, shalosh regalim, shalosh pe'amim. Shalosh regalim is prat le'balei kabin. So now, prat le'balei kabin over here is interesting because we learned before the lima that shalosh pe'amim was the way to exclude balei kabin because prosthetics weren't allowed. We saw that pe'amim meant footsteps with shoes on. And therefore, pe'amim was the exclusion. Why all of a sudden here, now you're saying regalim, and saying that's the exclusion. So Rashi notes over here that this must be somebody different. That this is a different limud than we saw before, because we already excluded them from shalosh pe'amim, and therefore they say here that hilkach regalim lemute mi shetzarich mishenet acheret levad mi regalav. So this comes to teach you that there's an exclusion for someone who needs, not like a prosthetic, where the prosthetic is his legs, but he needs some sort of crutch to help him out. Something where he can't walk on his legs freely. He needs some sort of aid in order to walk. So that's what it means over here. Balei kabin over here is not your classic balei kabin, which means someone wearing a prosthetic to replace the leg, which we excluded from shlosh pe'amim. This is shlosh regalim. Someone needs assistance in walking, but a mishenet, some sort of like, if you would say a walker of some sort, where they're leaning heavily on the walker in order to walk, that would be problematic. But here, that's why Rashi says here there's a separate limud here for other types of aids, other types of crutches that one would use. So davar acher, regalim, prat. This is what we're bringing it for in our Mishnah. It comes to exclude a chiger, a chole, a suma, a lezakein, she'enu yachol alot biraglav. These are all people who are incapable of making aliyah on their own. The chiger, who's lame, doesn't have that ability. Chole, the one who's sick, has the problem because he's just too weak to do it. The suma we'll leave out of here because the suma might be a different problem, nothing to do with walking up, because we saw before there were other limudim to exclude a suma. But it might be possible that he also has that problem, which is he can't walk up on his own. He needs some sort of aid to get up there. And the Zakein, again, who's too old, the elderly individual, can't walk. Now he wants to know, you just listed all these people who can't come up with their own strength. What's left here? What have you not included? This is very interesting. It comes to include people who are mifunakim, who are very particular about things. Dichtiv, because it says, Ki tavoo lirot panai, mi bikesh zot miyedchem ramos chatzirai. So when you came up to see me, this is in the first parak in Yeshayahu, it's the Haftorah for Shabbat Chazon. It's Hashem saying that I'm really not interested in you being here. It says, Ki tavoo lirot panai, when you came to see me, mi bikesh zot miyedchem, who asked you for this, ramos chatzirai, to trample through my courtyards? I don't want you here. Says Rashi points out over here, that ein adam nichnas la harabayit bimnalo. Person's not allowed to go up onto harabayit wearing shoes. And that's what he says. The word ramos chatzirai says, sounds like they're trampling on my courtyards. They wore shoes and they came up. Who asked you to come up with your shoes on? So they tavoli rot panai. They're coming to visit. This is Aliyah the regel. And Rashi is suggesting over here that it's ramos chatzirai, that they trampled over the courtyard means they were wearing shoes. Why? They were too mefunak. They didn't want to walk around barefoot, so they wore shoes. In defiance of the halacha that you're not allowed to wear shoes up in the harabayit or in the chatzer. And that's what the problem is. So that person is excluded. If someone is such a mifunak that they wouldn't want to walk up there without wearing shoes, then they would be excluded. They're patur min ha-ri'iya. It's interesting, by the way, just to have in mind that we saw before that a father who has a child that can ride on their shoulders takes the child up according to Beit Hillel as a mitzvah of chinuch in the Mishnah. So there we discuss, what does it mean that they're capable of doing this? What's the capability over there? The child doesn't have to do it. They just have to sit on their father's shoulders. So it might be that the capability is exactly what's discussed here, is the capability of the father to walk barefoot with the child riding on their shoulders. Just imagine today, if you had to walk up from Yerushalayim to Har Habayit and unto the Azara barefoot, I'd say some of the younger generation could handle it well. I think some of this in the older generation would be a little bit hard to go barefoot, walking up from Yerushalayim all the way up to Har Habayit, especially if you had kids riding on your shoulders then. It would not be so easy running up barefoot. So that's why this is an important factor here about being capable of walking up barefoot. So now the Gemara says, Tana, harel ve'atamei p'turim min ariya. Someone who is uncircumcised, someone who is tamei, defiled, is p'tur min ariya. It's not obligated in ariya. So Gemara says, bishlama tamei dichtiv. By tamei, it's easy to understand what the issue is. It says, uvata shama ve'veitim shama. You will go there and you will bring there. Anybody who can come, can bring. Anybody who can't come, can't bring. So this, it makes it very clear, by the way, from the Gemara, and you can look in Rashi right here. Rashi says, they don't have to send their korbanot. It's very clear here that the Gemara thinks that ri'iyah is the korban ri'iyah. Because the Gemara here says, anybody who can't make Aliyah the Regel, then is not obligated in Riyah. What does it mean, not obligated in Riyah? They don't have to bring the Korban. Rashi himself says that here. That's a stira to the Rashi on the Mishnah, who says that the Riyah is to appear. And we discussed why Rashi might do that because of the issue of the Katan. In the Mishnah, that might be why Rashi does it over there. But Rashi here agrees to what Tosafot says, which is basically that there is a Chiyuv Korban associated with Riyah. So the problem for the Tamei is, he can't come physically, he can't present himself there. Therefore, he doesn't obligated in bringing the korban ri'iyah. Tosafot over here takes up the issue about how broad is that requirement. Generally, we say that a tamei can send his korbanot up if he can't come himself. So why over here all of a sudden do we have this connection between appearing and being there and bringing the korbanot? So the Tosafot over here tries to differentiate if you have to be present to bring your korban or not bring present to your korban, and try to explain why some you do and some you don't, where the Gemara makes demands, like here, where you must be present, and in other places where it doesn't make such a demand. El arel minolan. Why would you exclude someone who's uncircumcised? It says, Hamani, Rabbi Akiva, this is Rabbi Akiva, de mirabi le la arel ketame, because he equates arel to tame. The Tanya, Rabbi Akiva, omer ish, ish. It says ish, ish, this is by echilat shuma of a kohen. It says, Rabot et Harel, to include an Harel. So these are ish ish, someone who is Tamei, who may not participate in eating of Truma. A Kohen who's Tamei may not eat Truma. So too, ish ish, here the Reboy makes you unable to. If you're just like a Tamei, and Harel is just like a Tamei, it means he can't eat the Truma. So So Rabbi Akiva equates between a Tamei, which is the subject of the Torah over there, which is people who are Tamei may not participate in the Kodoshim, may not participate in Truma. And he says, the Rabot, Arel is included in that category. So he equates between an Arel and a Tamei. So just like a Tamei is Patur, or a Tamei is precluded from eating Truma, so too is an Arel. And same thing over here. Just like a Tamei is Patur min Ariyah, so too an Arel will be Patur min Ha-Riyah. And as Rashi explains over here, how do we have a person that's an Arel? The person who's an Arel here is not someone who's an Arel because they refuse to get a Brit Milah. That's someone who is a Mumar. But rather, we're talking about someone who had brothers who had a Milah and they passed away from the Milah. It's too dangerous for him to get a Milah. It's not that he doesn't want to get a Milah. He wants to get a Milah. He's just unable to because of the circumstances that surround him. But Tosafot brings another approach, which is the possibility that he's an Arel because he's too scared to get a Brit Milah. The pain, he's afraid of the pain. Obviously, we're talking about someone who's getting a Brit Milah at an older age, not a baby at the age of 8 days. Or a very precocious child, who at 8 days does not want to get his Brit Milah. Tosafot brings that other approach, though favors Rashi's approach here, that it is Yisrael Shemetu Achav Machmat Milah. And now the Gemara says, Tanu Banan, Tamei Patur Min Ariyah Dichtiv Uvata Shama Veveitim Shama. Koshi Yeshno Bibiyah Yeshno Bahava. Anybody who can present themselves also brings. Kosheinu Bibiyah, someone who cannot show up, Inu Bahava. Rabbi Yochanan ben Da'avai Omer, Mishum Rabbi Yehuda. We saw this again on the first daf of the Masechta. We said that one of the possibilities of what a Kol Chayavim Bibiyah means, it comes to include someone who is Suma Bachat Me'enav, is blind in one eye. The Gemara says, Ugdoloki Haitana. It's not like this Tana. This Tana, who is Rabbi Yochanan ben Davai, in the name of Rabbi Yehuda, Sumachat Be'enav, Patur, Min Ariyah. He is Patur, Shnemar. So this is the Limud that we had over there, which is either Yireh, Yira'eh, or it's Yira'eh, Yireh, depending if you're Rashi or the Rabbeinu Tam, and explain this. Kederach Sheba Lir'ot, Kach Ba Le'ra'ot. Just like you come to see, so too you come to be seen, or possibly the other way around. Kederach Sheba Le'ra'ot, Kach Ba Lir'ot. Ma be'al lir ot b'shteinav, just like when he comes to see, you do with your two eyes, af lir ot b'shteinav, so to be seen by the two eyes. We spent a lot of time on this on the first daf, I'm not going to go over it, the different interpretations of Rashi and Tosafot as to what is referencing to whom, who's coming, is it a Kodesh Baruch Hu coming, is it you coming, who's doing the seeing and who's being seen. So those are the differences between Rashi and Tosafot or Rabbeinu Tam, and that makes a difference of whether you say yir'eh, yir'eh, or yir'eh, yir'eh, based on their positions. The assumption is that there's a parallel between the individual who is Oleh L'Regel and a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And a Kodesh Baruch Hu clearly sees, quote-unquote, figuratively with two eyes, because Hashem is clearly Shalem. So that equation now says the individual who is paralleled with Hashem must also see in the same way that Hashem sees, which means B'shtei Enav. That's the basic idea of the Limud, how it actually is carried out. That's how Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam discussed back on the first daf. Right now, the Gemara is going to launch into a little bit of a gadata because we quoted that pasuk from Yishayahu in the first parak, and it's going to bring a number of statements of the Amoraim about they used to be very upset or cry when they reached certain psukim in the Tanakh. Rav Huna kimatid aikra, when he reached this pasuk, yireh yireh, bachi, he would cry. Amar eved shirabo mitzapeh lo lir'oto, an eved whose master is looking forward to his coming, Yitrachek mimenu, now distance themselves from him. Dichtiv, ki tavol lirot panai, mi mikesh zot miyedchem, ramos chatzirai. When you come to visit me, who asked you to come here to trample through my courtyards? I don't want to see you. So here, when Kodesh Baruch Hu speaks about Yireh and Yira'eh, which we already saw was an equation of both an appearance and being seen, meaning that both the person who is there and a Kodesh Baruch Hu see each other, let's call it that, that we're both appearing to see each other, there's a sort of relationship that's involved there. And now, this individual who had any relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, meaning Klal Yisrael, that had this relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, all of a sudden Hashem says, not only don't come, but I don't even want to see you anymore. Out! So he says, look at what's transpired. Look how difficult, look how bad the situation has become. So he used to cry for the good old days when Hashem wanted to see us, and not now where he doesn't want to see us. Ravuna kimati lahai kra bochi. Ravuna, when he reached this pasuk, used to cry. This week's parsha, again from Parsha Kitavo, zvachta shlamim v'achalta sham, and that's v'samachta lifnei Hashem elokecha. This is the source for the fact that simcha is only through basar shlamim. This is talking about the korbanot at Har Gizim and Har Eival. that are here mentioned in Pashat Kitabo. So it says there, v'zavachta shlamim v'achalta sham. Eved sh'rabo mitzape lechol al shulchano. It's as if HaKadosh Baruch was inviting us to share in his meal. A korban shlamim. Portion it goes to the balim, portion to the kohen, a portion to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's as if we're breaking bread together. All figuratively. Yitrachek imenu dichtiv. In that same parak in Yishayel, when we read in Chazon, Islamali rov zivkachem ayumar Hashem. What do I want all your korbanot for? I'm not interested in your korbanot anymore. So what used to be that Hashem wanted to break bread with us, to share with us in the korbanot, also now Hashem says, I'm not interested in your korbanot anymore. The reason he's not interested in our korbanot is because the way that we're behaving, we're not treating other people properly. That's the whole point of that first parak in Yishayahu is, Yadechem damim leyu, your hands are full of blood, meaning that you're mistreating the atom, the almanah, you're not doing tzedek and mishpat, and then you want to come up and cleanse that by bringing up a korban to me. I'm not interested in your korbanot if you don't do ben adam lechaviro. So that's exactly what Hashem says. I'm not interested in your korbanot anymore. So Belazer kimati lahai kra bochi, when he reached this pasuk, he would cry. V'lo yachlu echav la'anot oto nivhalu mipanav. This is by Yosef when he reveals himself to his brothers. They could not respond to him because they were so shocked. They were so taken aback by Yosef's revelation. Here it's just a human being, and they're so scared and they can't handle, they're speechless. When you have to face the Kodesh Baruch Hu, and Hashem reveals himself to you, how difficult it will be to speak up at that point. I mean that if you do something wrong and you can't stand before a human being, it's so difficult. You do something wrong, you have to stand before a Kodesh Baruch Hu eventually, that's even scarier. When he reached this pasuk, he used to cry. Vayomer Shmuel el Shaul. Lama yir gazdani lalototi. This is where Shaul, towards the end of his life, the night before the battle in Har Gilboa, goes to the Balat Ov to find out what's going to happen because he can't get access to a Kodesh Baruch Hu through the normal channels. He's unable to get the Navi or the Urim V'Tumim to help him. And therefore, he goes to the alternate channel of going to the Balat Ov V'idoni. It's ironic because Shaul wiped out all the people who were in the Ov V'Idoni, and in the end, he's the one who finds it, and they know where to find this woman who is a Balat Ov V'Idoni. So that's a certain amount of irony in this story. He says, "Ma Shmuel Atzadik haya mitrei min adin, anu al chad kam v'kama." Shmuel Atzadik, who complains to Shaul, "Why did you bring me up over here?" I mean, the Balat Ov brings up Shmuel to speak to Shaul. And then Shmuel says, "What are you doing that you brought me up over here?" Shmuel Tzadik, what was he afraid of? He was afraid of being brought to din, being brought to justice. Us? Certainly so. Shmuel Mahi, what was he afraid of? Here the Gemara explains, Dichtiv, it says, "Vatomar Yishal Shaul, Elokim Ra'iti Olim." It says there that I see Olim in plural. Olim Trei Mashma. Why does it say that there are two people rising over here? Chad Shmuel, one of them is Shmuel, because we know that Shmuel appears there. Vidach the Azul Shmuel v'achil the Moshe Bade. Who's the other one? That Shmuel went ahead and got Moshe to accompany him over here. So Amalei Dilma Chas v'Shalom the Dina Midbaina says maybe Chas v'Shalom they're taking me to the din. They're taking me to judgment that I did something wrong. Kum ba'adai, come with me. Daleka milta the kataftu b'daraita lo tukamtia. There's nothing in the Torah that I didn't keep. What it sounds like from here is that he's bringing him to be a character witness for Shmuel, that Moshe will come and testify on behalf of Shmuel that he kept everything in the Torah. As Tosafot points out, how could he testify? He wasn't alive when Shmuel was alive. They're not in the same generation. How could he testify about what Shmuel's doing? So Tosafot rereads this and says that it's not actually that he wants him to testify as a witness. Elahayahu mer kach v'kach darashti vasiti. These were the drashot. These were the halachot that I instituted and did. Vasiti maseh. Bo ve'iduni shekayin lamata gamata. You come and acquiesce to the fact that this is Torah mi Moshe. So Shmuel says, I was a posek, I was a doresh, and now I want you to testify the fact that whatever I was doresh, and whatever I was posek, is in line with what Moshe would have done, or in line with Torah Moshe. This is Torah mi Moshe. It's an interesting concept. It's a concept we already bumped into again in yesterday's daf as well. This idea of, even though we, Paskin Aloha, we're trying to line up halacha with that which when Moshe Rabbeinu said. We have the story by Rabbi Akiva, where Moshe Rabbeinu visits the class of Rabbi Akiva, and he sits there and he doesn't understand a word that Rabbi Akiva is saying, and he's all upset, he doesn't know what's going on, and then also at the end he says, halacha l'Moshe Mitzinai. And Moshe is then calmed by the fact that he says, halacha l'Moshe Mitzinai. Why did that calm him down? So I spoke about it when we spoke about that Gadato, that it's important when we have Psak Halacha, and we have a Doresh, that many times you have to be Mechadesh, you have to say things that were not said before. But what the important part of it is, the Torah has the ability to be dynamic, the Torah has the ability to be expansive, that we saw in yesterday's daf, that halalu mitarim, v'halalu mitamim, halalu mechshirim, halalu puslim, that there are different ways to interpret the Torah. The most important thing is that one is anchored in the Torah, and that's what this idea of Halacha l'Moshe Mitzinai, or this idea that Shmuel says, I said this drasha, I said this, I said that. It's obvious that Moshe didn't say that, but the fact is he wants him to testify that that was anchored in Torah Moshe. And so that's the most important part of it, that even a person who's Mechadesh, he has to be within the confines of, I'll call it Halacha l'Moshe Mitzinai loosely, but he has to be connected to the Mesorah. And if you're connected to the Mesorah, and that's what drives the Chidush and the Psak, then that's something that's Torah Mi Moshe, because that's the dynamic of Halacha and Torah Shebaal Peh. But if someone's Mechadesh or Doresh in the abstract, then that doesn't work, because then there's no connection, there's no anchor to Torah Moshe, and then it's no longer Torah Moshe anymore. And that's a key difference between someone who is Mechadesh and Doresh, based in the Torah, and is halachically acceptable, to someone who is outside the realm or the Mizgeret of Halacha, of Torah Moshe, when they're Mechadesh, without being anchored in the Mesorah. The point of all this is that Shmuel, who's a big tzaddik, was afraid that he was going to din, and he had to bring Moshe with him. Us? Ochad kam v'gama, we're not Shmuel and Avi. Rabbi Ami, kimati lai kra bochi, when he reached this pasuk, he would cry, a pasuk in the third parak in Eicha, itein ba'afar piyu, ulai yesh tikva. He'll have the dirt moving in his mouth, maybe there is some hope. So the way Rashi reads it over here is, after all these isurim, maybe there is some hope. Or the way that the Marsha reads it is, itein ba'afar piyu, ulai yesh tikva, is going back on the things that were said before. And the psukim that come up to this, which are Tov Hashem lekovav, v'nefesh tidushenu, Tov legever kisa ol binurav, Yeshev badad v'dom ki natal alav, Tein ba'afar piu, ulai yesh tikva. So the ulai yesh tikva means that even if you've done all this, all these things that are mentioned in the previous psukim, still ulai yesh tikva. Maybe, only maybe then there is hope. So not like Rashi who says, despite all the bad that's happened, there is maybe hope. But rather, despite all the things that we've tried, there's still maybe only hope that things will get better. It is a statement of Nechama going to both of them, but it's a statement of Chatzi Nechama. Why? Amar Kulei Hai Vulai. After all of this, and it's only maybe. That's the problem. Nechama is Ulai Yesh Tikva. Maybe there's hope. So after all these Yisurim, even post-Korban and all the Yisurim, now maybe there's hope. Maybe there's hope. We went through so much. Why, how could it get worse? Why would it be worse? That's the point. That's why he cried over here, because it was only maybe. Rabbi Ami kimati lai kra bochi. When he reached this pasuk, he would cry. Bikshu sedek, bikshu anava, ulai tisachru b'yom afashem. You should search for righteousness, search for humility. Maybe you'll be able to hide on the day of Hashem's anger. I mean that maybe you'll have to be protected. So again, amar kulei hai b'ulai. This is someone who's going after tzedek, anava. This is an individual I would call a tzaddik. And yet, maybe he will be protected on the day of Hashem's anger. But it's not a foolproof protection despite all that they do. So that's a reason to cry, because we, who don't reach that level, certainly we're going to be exposed to the af Hashem if it's only an ulai for the tzaddik. Rav Yasi, kimati lahai kra bochi. When he reached this pasuk, he cried. Sinu Rabbe Evutov, Itzigu B'Shar Mishpat, Ulai Yechanan Hashem Elokei Tzvakot Sherit Yosef. Hate evil, love good. Itzigu B'Shar Mishpat, and ensure that there is justice in the Shar. The Shar is the place where the Beit Din sat. Maybe Hashem will be graceful. Maybe Hashem will look favorably upon us. Kulihai V'Ulai. Again, you do all this, and it's still only a maybe, right? That's somewhat disappointing, that even if you do all this, it's maybe, then for us who can never reach that level, then it's scary to think about. All right, then we have this last one, which is, Rav Yosef, kimati lai kra bochi. Rav Yosef, when he reached this pasuk, used to cry, v'yesh nispeh b'lo mishpat. Sometimes there's someone who's taken away without any justice. So this is interesting. It's almost negative, the pasuk that we say in Parshat Hazino. We're going to read that in a couple of weeks. Kele munah v'eni avel. Sadiq v'yasharhu, he is a righteous and straight one, that he has no perversion with him, because it's him as a tzaddik. He doesn't notel the mishpat at all. So over here, all of a sudden, you have Yesh Nispeh below Mishpat. What does that mean? So that's why Rav Yosef cried. So Marga says, Nida Ika Dazel below Zmane? Wait a minute, is this really true? That there's such a thing that a person's life can be taken even though it's not his time to go? Which is what the Pasuk is suggesting over here. That it's without Mishpat. It's not the just time when they should be taken away, and yet they're dying. So it says, in, there is such a thing. Kihad Rabibi Bar Abaye. If Rabibi Bar Abaye is an Amor Rav Shchiach, Gabay Malach HaMavet. He used to hang out with the Malach HaMavet. They were buddies, or he had inside track to Malach HaMavet. Amrlei L'shluchei Zil Aitali Miriam Megadlo Seyar Neshayo. The Malach HaMavet says, go bring me Miriam, the one who braids the women's hair. Also, Aitali Miriam Megadlo Dadoki. Instead, he brings back Miriam, the caretaker, a nanny, a surrogate mother, or a kindergarten teacher, someone who brings up the kids. He brought the wrong Miriam. Amrlei, Ana Miriam Megadlo Seyar Neshayo Amrilach. I told you to bring the other Miriam. Why'd you bring me this Miriam? Amrlei, Ihochi Ahadro. So I said, that's the case. Send her back. Amrlei, Ho Vaitite Lehave Leminyono. Well, if you brought her already, she'll count towards our quota. You have a story by Rav Bibi, where they brought the wrong Miriam. And first of all, you see here he has a quota that he has to meet. And then he says, I got the wrong Miriam, so let's go put her back. He says, no, if she's here already, we're just going to keep her for the quota. How did you get her? How could you get her if it wasn't her time to go? And that the Malach HaMavet doesn't have permission to get somebody when it's not their time. So how did you actually get this person? So I'm like, Hava Nakita Mit'aro Biyado. She was holding, whether it's a poker or a scraper of some sort in her hand, Vavakava Shagra Omecharia Tanura. She was using it to scrape out the oven. Shakalta, then she took it out. Vanachta Gabo de Karo, and she by accident placed it down on the top of her foot. And then Kadcha, it burnt her. She was injured by this, by the poker, by the scraper that was very hot from being inside the oven and scraping out, that she burnt herself. Ve'itra Mazla Vaitita. She had bad luck. It was a bad luck for her at that time, and therefore I was able to bring her. I mean, that you see from here that when something bad happens, that's a time of what we call bad luck, bad mazel. And once you're in that situation of bad mazel, you can pile on. And that's what he did. He basically got her at that bad moment, and he was able to take her away. That's what we say also in the Mishnah Avot. Don't mess around with people who asha'a misacheket lo, when things are going well for them. Because when someone's mazel is going well, then you don't want to mess with them because they're able to overcome anything. It's the opposite of this Gemara. When you have good mazel, then everything goes your way, even though it shouldn't go your way. When you have bad mazel, everything doesn't go your way, even though it should go your way. So that's that concept of both sides of the coin. I'll come back and speak about Miriam Magdalos, Miriam Megadla Seyar Neshaya in a minute, because the Tosafot brings up an interesting point over here, and we need to discuss it. Since when do you have permission to do this? Amalei Veloktiv, doesn't the Pasuk say, and he quotes him the Pasuk, now V'yesh Nispeh Velo Mishpat, yeah, I have a puzzle that supports me in Kohelet, which says that sometimes people are taken, even though it's not the just thing to do, like I just did. That's what the Malach HaMavet says. Amalei Vaktiv, Dor Olech V'Dor Ba. So then, Rabbi Barabai Svazma says, wait, doesn't say Dor Olech V'Dor Ba. A generation comes, a generation goes, and everybody has their time. And you're not allowed to take people before their time. So Amar, Dereina Lohu, Ana, Adamalu Lohu Ledara. Says that I'm going to hold on to her until her time comes about. And then I'm going to give her over to Duma, as is being implied over here, is the place that the souls go once they pass away. So in the meantime, he says, I'm not going to place her there. She's not going to go to her quote-unquote final resting place. She's in a limbo state now. She's going to hang out with me until the time comes when she should have died, and then I'm going to put her in there. So Malay, Sof, Shane, Ma'avad. You have these extra years that you took away. What happens to those years now that you took away? Okay, fine, she can hang out with you, but she's not down on the Aretz. So I'm right, Ika Tsurmi Derabonan Ma'avid B'milei. If I find a young Talmud Chacham who is Ma'avir B'midotav, someone who's not Makpid, he doesn't worry when other people offend him or affront him, he lets things go, roll off, then Mosifna Lahulai, then I add it on to him, Vavia Chilufei, and then becomes the replacement. So you see a number of ideas. One is that they have to fill up the quotas, so someone's got to fill the quota, even if it's the wrong person. On the other hand, there are a number of years that have to be lived out, and if it's taken away from one, it's got to be given to someone else. So both of these are explained over here. The Marsha over here quotes the pasuk with regards to this duma. He says that's what the pasuk means. Lo amitim yahaluluka, velo kol yordei duma. The dead will not give praise to Hashem, nor will those that go down to duma. So duma, in that sense, would be those that go down to Gehinom. Ravir explains that's the difference. There's people that will not praise Hashem are not the mitim, who are mitgalim, who are floating around in the world, like it's been described here about this Miriam that the Malchum Av is carrying out. The local Yorde Duma, those that have already been put into Duma, put into Gehinom, they also will not praise Hashem. But we, rather, Vanachnu, Niske Bechayim, we want to be Zoche, married to a life, Shalolamut, Shalobizmano, not to die at the wrong time, Lashut Bolam, to float around, Velonavot, Gamken, the Rishut Duma. And we also shouldn't reach the place of Duma, Hamamuner ala Gehinom, who lives, watches over Gehinom. And we'll be able to praise Hashem forever because the neshama that doesn't go through that is the neshama that's attached to Hashem, that is tzur b'tzura chayim, that is attached to the everlasting God, and therefore we'll be able to praise Hashem forever. So that's the way the Marsha explains this little piece. Now, what is interesting over here is Miriam Magdala Seyar Neshaya. Over here, Tosafot says about this. The last Tosafot on the Amud says, that v'shkiach abei malach amavet, the misaper mashir lo kvar. Tosafot suggests over here that Rabbi Barabai was not talking about things that were happening in his generation, but rather talking about stories in the past. And that's what Rabbeinu Hanano says over here, V'yesh mishomer kinyan chalom ra'ad varim alalu. That is if Rabbi Barabai saw this in a dream, and this was the story that played out in the dream. Not literally that he was talking to the Malcham Ovid, but he had a dream about this. Tosafot on the other hand says he's having a conversation, but the Malcham Ovid is talking to him about the old days. Why does he say that? Dai uvda de Miriam Magdala Neshaya b'Bayit Sheni aya. He says this story about Miriam Magdala Neshaya is in Bayit Sheni. Dai ta'imo shel Ploni. She was the mother of Ploni. Oto Aish. That person, which is the other possible girsa in Tosafot over here that's taken out, of Oto Aish. Oto Aish is referencing to Jesus. What Tosafot is referencing is a Gemara in Shabbat on Daf Kuf Dalet. Gemara in Shabbat Kuf Dalet was censored out, so we don't have this Gemara in our Gemarot. But some of the more recent Gemarot who have now reinstated or put back in from the Kitvei Yad and put in the censored Gemara have a Gemara that talks about this Miriam Magdala. Now, there is a problem here, and I'm going to explain to you the problem. Tosafot is already talking about the problem, which is, if this is really Mary Magdalene, then what you have a problem is that we're talking about Rabbi Babaye, who's an Amora, who's way after the time of Bayit Sheni. Whereas the story of Mary Magdalene is back in the time of Bayit Sheni. So Tosafot reconciles over here and deals with that issue and says, no problem. Because he was just telling about what happened in the past, or according to Rabbeinu Hanano, he had a dream about what had happened. So it's not something that was taking place in the present. So that's how Tosafot reconciles with it. The problem with that is, the story in the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat that was censored out parallels a Gemara in the end of Gittin, where Rashi says that the Miriam over there is Mary Magdalene. And the problem is that this Miriam Megadla Seir Neshayo, or this Mary Magdalene, was the wife of Pappas ben Yehuda. She was the wife of Pappas ben Yehuda, and Pappas ben Yehuda was so worried about her being mizaneh, being an adulteress, that he locked her up in the house. He would never let her out of the house, and he locked her away in the house. He wouldn't let her go out at all. The Gemara says, because he did that, she ended up being mizaneh. She was an adulteress in the end because he had locked her up. He didn't allow her any social. It was an extreme that was not proper, and therefore, in the end, he got the opposite effect. Because instead of getting the desired result that he wants, she ends up being an adulteress. That's the Gemara in Gittin. Go over to the Gemara in Shabbat that was censored out. That Gemara in the Gemara in Shabbat says she had the affair and gives the name Ben Stadaya and says born out of that adulterous affair is Oto Aish. That's the way the Gemara is described in Shabbat. So the Gemara in Shabbat says, and this is what Tosafot is referencing over here, this is Mary Magdalene. It was an illicit extramarital affair that produces Oto Aish. What's the problem? The problem is that you actually have entered now a different problem. Pappas ben Yehuda is found in the Gemara in a number of places. One of them is at the end of the Gemara in Brachot. Over there, Pappas ben Yehuda is in jail, jailed by the Romans, and Rabbi Akiva then is jailed by the Romans for teaching Torah. Rabbi Akiva comes into the jail and Pappas ben Yehuda says, Ashrecha, that you were nitpasto al Divrei Torah. versus me that was nitpasal davar acher, I was just caught for whatever activity, something else that wasn't Torah or something great like that. That means that Papas ben Yehuda is a peer of Rabbi Akiva. So now we have the problem. The problem is that Rabbi Akiva lives at the time of the Bar Kokhba revolts. Let's say it's like somewhere at 120 to 160 in the common era. Then you have Bibi Bar Abaye, who lives as an Amora, lives probably a good 300-400 years after that. Then you have the story of Jesus, who lives when the Bayit Shini is still extant, at the year zero, which is 120, 130 years before Papas ben Yehuda. So the problem of connecting the dots between these Gemarot are, you're actually dealing with stories that are in three different periods. You have Rabbi Bibi Bar Abaye and Amora. You have a story about Papas ben Yehuda and Rabbi Akiva, which is in the time of the Bar Kokhba revolts. And then you're talking about Oto Aish, which is based on the Gemara in Shabbat, which would imply that it was at the year zero, in the time when Bayit Sheni still extant, like Tosafot says over here. The problem is you can't reconcile all the three stories, connecting the three stories together, because of that timeline, which makes it questionable whether this is really Mary Magdalene, because over here the Gemara says that she was a Megadla Seyar Nishaya. She was someone who braided. The word Megadel means to braid, and therefore that would have been the meaning over here. And we see over here also Miriam Megadla Dardaki, someone who brings up children. So the word Magdalo is used in many different contexts. They could both be the answer to the problem in one way, which is it's just not Mary Magdalene, or could be the answer to the problem, which is it was a common name. Now Mary Magdalene was not something unique. It was somebody who was either a braider or someone who brought up children. I mean, that was a term that was used by many women, and not just by her uniquely. So it was a more generic type of name, and therefore it might have been that both stories are true, we're just not talking about the same person. The difficulty with that is that Gemara connects between Papas ben Yehuda and that story, which that makes it very difficult to explain that it was Mary the Magdalene and it was Oto Aish. So just so you know, this is some of the issues surrounding this Gemara over here, which is quoted by Tosafot, which is dependent on a Gemara in Gittinah and Shabbat. Okay, we're going to stop here on the top of Hey Amud Aleph, about 10 lines down in the Gemara.